2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Taco Tuesday PGA DFS podcast presented to you by DFSArmy.com. Use promo code TACO today on sign up using the link in the description to come check out all of our premium PGA content, including the research station where we break down all of the relevant statistics for this tournament, and of course our domination station lineup optimizer. And content for all other daily fantasy sports, all included with your DFS Army subscription. And you can get that lifetime 10% off discount using promo code TACO. So come check us out. We are headed to the AT&T Byron Nelson, back to Texas. We had a few events earlier in the season, the Houston Open, the Texas Open in Texas. And we are headed to a new course for this event. The AT&T Byron Nelson used to be hosted at the TPC Four Seasons, but this year we are headed to a new venue in Trinity Forest Golf Club. And let me tell you a little bit about this new course. It's very different than a lot of the courses that we see on the PGA Tour. It's extremely long, almost 7,500 yards. It's a par 72. And while the fairways are extremely wide, accuracy off the tee is going to be important here, as there are lots of challenges along the way. You've got some fairway bunkers that are right in the middle of fairways, a lot of cleverly placed greens, just lots of fairway bunkers that you can get into here. And instead of having a lot of rough and trees, we have just pure fescue all around. So while the fairways are kind of hard to miss, and we'll probably see a very high average when it comes to field driving accuracy, we will still probably look to driving accuracy more than driving power or driving distance this week, just due to placement being so important. The approach shots are either easy or extremely hard, depending on where you hit your ball off of the tee on these par fours. And the greens can be quite massive. In fact, we have a shared green on this course between, I think, the 3rd and the 11th hole or something like that. They both share one massive green. And while these greens are huge and kind of hard to miss, they're very undulating. The whole course undulates up and down, slope rating of 134. And there's tons of false fronts on this course. The balls can roll off quite easily. And the course was sort of designed to be a challenge for the approach shot hitters and ball strikers, and of course a mix of driving distance and accuracy. So total driving very important here. Being able to hit it longer is going to make your second shots a lot easier, but like I said, you have to hit it in the right spots. You can't just bomb it away and just hit it from wherever it lands. There's so many drives require second and third opinions. You'll see that throughout the week, and I think it's a course that the players are going to figure out as the week goes along. We had one amateur event at this course, and the scores are kind of a little bit tough at first, but the players figured out the course pretty easily and were scoring on it well. The thing is, it was an amateur event, and they've changed it a lot since then, even though it was just last year. None of these players are like PGA Tour level, and they played at 7,100 yards, and we're at about 7,400 yards for this event on the PGA Tour. Plus it'll have all the added fun of bleachers and stuff. And the PGA Tour, while they are making it a little harder to play, they might be worried about it being a little too hard. The players protested a little and got them to water down the course this week. And they will also be leaving the greenside grass a little bit longer than we would expect here. So the balls might not roll off the edge quite as much, That'll still happen a lot here, because that's how these greens are all shaped. They're all pretty much on mounds. But another side effect of the greenside grass being a little longer is the players can't just putt it up the hill. They're going to need to be able to chip from some of these collection areas. So we're looking at strokes gained around the green just a little bit more than we would on an average week. You know, usually we don't really look to strokes gained putting or around the green all that much, but around the green will matter a little bit more this week, with people potentially missing these fairways and having to face some really, really tough chips that could result in, you know, them rolling right off of the green or something. You've got to have at least a decent short game to get around here. And when it comes to putting, we're on some Championship Bermuda, but the stimp meter, it's looking like we'll get to around a 10.5, which is pretty similar to the Wells Fargo. On these slower greens, they will be undulating a lot, but since they're slower, the good putters can be a little bit more aggressive when going for one putts, as where if the course was really fast, you know, the advantage might go to the lag putters. But on a slower course, we do like to look at players who are a little bit better at putting, so we will be weighing in putting a little bit more. And you know, something that I've added for this week, or I guess added back into the fold again, used to have it quite often, but haven't had it recently since we changed the stats around. Was able to get through, or get to it this week, the Stat Cruncher. You can essentially just make sort of a custom model for whichever stats you think are going to be the most important for the week. They're all weighted to the field averages for these guys. So, you know, it goes by how much better or worse they are than the field average, all these different stats, driving, distance, accuracy, greens regulation, whatnot. You can focus more on the odds or more on fantasy scoring per hole, or focus more on strokes gained off the tee, approach, what have you. But you can go ahead, get on the research station here, and either copy it over to your drive or download it and mess with it in Excel. It should automatically update for you. You can just see who all pops up just based on the stats that you are interested in looking at. Kind of want to look, in my opinion, want to look more towards, of course, stroke scanned approach, always very important, greens regulation percentage. I really want to look at double bogey or worse percentage. It's not a public stat, one I made myself here, but you can see how often players double bogey, and, you know, that's something that could be important here, as it seems like the course is going to be fairly easy, but there could potentially be some larger numbers to be had. Not as much as last week, but last week is more about the, you know, hitting the water here. There's no water at this course, but there's still some trouble to be had if you can't chip it around the greens. So, you know, driving accuracy, driving distance, you kind of want a combination of both. It is a longer course, so driving distance is going to be important, but you cannot spray it off of the tee, like, really badly. It's not like Quail Hollow that we saw just a couple weeks ago. You know, that was a similar size course, but there, oftentimes you're encouraged to miss the fairways. Here, the fairways are kind of hard to miss, but you have to place them just right, or else you're going to be hitting an awful shot out of one of those fairway bunkers, and that's not going to be very friendly to you. Now, since this event is new, we don't know anything about the course, or we don't know what correlates to success here in the past, we're going to want to look at more of our overall metrics, you know, strokes gained, tee to green. Adjusted field rank is a really good one. It's probably our best overall metric of just how players do in relation to everyone else in the field, just adjusted for strength of field. And made cut percentage is going to be crucial. 6 out of 6 percentage is probably going to be fairly low here. It's not like next week where we'll have a bit of a reduced field. This week we have 152 golfers in the field, so it's a completely full field. 6 out of 6 percentage in GPP, especially with the field being so weak, is going to be pretty high. And, you know, if the heavy favorite here, Spieth, doesn't win, it's hard to really know who's going to take this thing home. We've seen similar fields to this, like the field at Valero, just loaded with scrubs up at the top. So who knows what to make of this week a little bit. We kind of want to look to overall statistics, you know, your average adjusted field rank, fantasy points per hole is a really good one just to go off of when you're just looking at pure DraftKings scoring. And approach numbers are going to help a lot. If you can avoid missing the greens here and having to deal with that mess, that is probably going to pay good dividends. And of course, ownership is going to be very important when we're adding variance to the mix, because if guys get chalky, I could easily see them missing the cut if the wins pick up a bit here like they're expected to. So trying to fade some of this chalk and finding some low-owned guys. There will probably be tons of guys underneath the 2% mark, and any of those guys could win really outside of like the guys like 500 to 1 or worse. Although, shoot, Stephen Bowditch is 803 to 1, and he has won at this event. Not at this course, obviously, but at this event in the past. I mean, anything can happen, really, with a field like this with almost no scrubs. So try to do your best to fade the chalk and GPP, and even in cash, you don't. There's no one you really have to play. There are some guys that look like they're in pretty good spots just based on the rest of the field being crappy. But just try to find some plays that, you know, don't just play random people for no reason other than they'll be low owned. Try to find some guys that stick out in some of the things we're looking for, or just have potential upside in GPP. Hopefully you'll find that really low-owned guy that brings it home for you here. It could be one of those weeks where a guy that has 0.2% ownership just wins it for you. Looking at the field here, we only have, I'd say, four golfers of elite talent, and only one of those being world-class talent. I mean, I'd consider Sergio Garcia to be up there, too, with Jordan Spieth, but Sergio's been playing pretty rough lately, missing a couple cuts in a row, and almost MDFing last week. Finished last of the guys that did not MDF. So, you know, he's in a bit of a bad spot right now. So you've got Jordan Spieth, $11,900 on DraftKings, $12,900 on FanDuel. And right now he's at 5.3 to 1 on the odds books, looking like a huge favorite. One of the biggest favorites we've seen this year, if not the biggest favorite in any field that we have seen all year long. 5 to 1. Of course, you've got to consider the rake in there, so it may not be a perfect 20%, but the books are still giving him about, say, a 17% chance of winning this entire tournament, and that's some really good equity for one guy. That's just a very large percentage. We don't see that often at all. Last week, the favorites were in the 11 to 1 range with the strength of field there. So you've got Spieth by far probably the chalk up top, and definitely the class of the field. And then just a huge drop off in talent. The $9,000 range is fairly decent, but you're kind of surprised by the guys you see in this range. Then the $8,000 and $7,000, depending on what site you're looking at, starts to look like the $6,000 range of other tournaments. And then once you get into the actual $6,000 range here, just a lot of guys that are either like web.com guys or just guys who, you know, fight for exemptions on the PGA Tour and just kind of do what they can to keep their tour card. Or you see a lot of guys that you only see in like the swing season that don't qualify for tournaments very often. Just a really weak field, similar to the Valero Texas Open, probably about that strength of field, maybe a bit worse even. But not as bad as like the Corrales Punta Cana. So that was still the worst field of the entire year. So looking at the top guys here, of course you got Spieth. Everything about his game outside of his putting, of course, is in a good spot. By far, he leads the field in adjusted field rank. He's just the class of this field. 72% greens in regulation. Have him right at the top of this field, just barely, over anybody else. And that's kind of the name of the game here. Jordan Spieth, of course, he's going to be chalky. He didn't look the greatest last week. He was ninth going into the final round and had a pretty crappy Sunday. Maybe people will remember that, but they'll definitely remember his third at the Masters and at the Shell Houston Open, and his ownership will definitely be pretty hefty, I'd say, because the guys right underneath him, Kuchar, Garcia, Matsuyama, not really names that come to mind when you think of guys that could win here, especially with Garcia and Matsuyama being in their current form. And with Kuchar, it just it seems like a ridiculous price to pay for Kuchar. Like, he's $10,700 in DraftKings, $12,100 on FanDuel. Really hard to justify paying all that for Matt Kuchar, and he's sitting at 14-1. So compared to Jordan Spieth, I mean, he's $1,200 more on DraftKings, only $800 more on FanDuel, but the difference in value there is just incredible. You know, if you look at Matt Kuchar's implied odds here from his Vegas odds, at least, are looking at like 6 or 7% compared to Spieth's 17, 18%. Just a world of difference there. So optimally, Jordan Spieth is going to be the play here, worth all the money. You just have to factor in the fact that he is going to be super chalky, and if you want to gain any sort of advantage with him, you're going to have to play him at a pretty uncomfortable level to where he could ruin your entire day. Now, he is a member at this course. He's from Texas. He's one of the few guys that have a lot of experience playing here, unlike the rest of the field. He's kind of here because of his sponsor, sponsored by AT&T. So that's one of the reasons that he doesn't get to skip along with all the other studs. But I think he would have played anyway. I mean, he really likes playing the Texas events. Usually doesn't do all that great in them, but, you know, third in Houston. Not really comparing this course to Houston, trying to compare it more to the Valero Texas Open. And I guess the Wells Fargo as well a couple weeks ago, just similar length, similar kinds of greens, I guess. But you know, they each have their differences, of course. But with Texas, the Texas Open, that also got fairly windy. We're thinking about, you know, we're looking at some winds here in the forecast that might give a bit of a small advantage to guys teeing off in the PM. Maybe you can look for that. And I know that tee times are just posted, and Jordan Spieth does have a Thursday PM tee time, which I guess favors him a little bit, but still, you just have to ask yourself if you're willing to eat that much chalk with Jordan Spieth, and then kind of move on to the next guy in your lineup. And you're going to have to find some guys down low that you're comfortable with to get Spieth in there. That might not be something you want to do this week. With Kuchar, he has an amazing course history here, but that doesn't matter at all. Still, really good player in Texas. Has been playing really solidly lately. Has gotten into the top 10s and leaderboards week to week. Just been really solid. Always. He's always really solid. Excellent made cut percentage, 86.7%. Probably the number one guy in the field there. Outside of maybe, nope, I guess there's no one, no scrub or whatever, that's like 2 for 2 in cuts made. So he's the number one guy in the entire field when it comes to that stat. Obviously not the longest driver of the ball, but avoids double bogeys, hits his greens regulation, gains strokes in everything but strokes gained off of the tee, which he's neutral in. A very good putter. Kuchar's just the safe guy. I'd play him in cash, and usually I'd say I'd avoid him in GPP, but I don't think he's going to be terribly popular. I mean, it does look nice on DraftKings seeing that 14 out of 14 and the cuts made there, but on FanDuel I could definitely consider getting in on Kuchar. He was very low owned over there on FanDuel last week, is where he's maintained ownership in the teens on DraftKings. Then you've got Sergio Garcia, who's just been playing terribly. Had that 8 at the Masters, kept finding the water, and just played horribly at Texas. Last week at the Players, just had that blow-up round. He's been posting a lot of 80s. Now, he won this event a couple of years ago and has always done well here, but again, doesn't quite matter. His strokes gained approach numbers are just off the charts. That's the main thing that sticks out about him. One thing I forgot to mention in the course breakdown is that there's 6 medium length par fours, and he is tied for number one in the field with Martin Laird at the best fantasy points per medium par five at 0.96 fantasy points per hole, so averaging, you know, a bit over a birdie. It's kind of weird to compare fantasy points and scoring because you usually want to go under, but he's definitely found some birdies on these medium length par fours. The best in the field at that in particular, and also does well in the long par fives, like very well. And you've got at least one of these four par fours are just super long, like 600 plus yards. But overall, you've got two long ones, just one longer than the other, and then two of the shorter par fives, which Sergio actually struggles with those. He does much better at the longer ones when you can convince him to not go for the green and kind of lay it up. So the one par five, the super long 630-yard par five, that one will keep Sergio in check. The others, who knows, he might go for it. And the way these par fives are set up, the greens are heavily protected, and this is something I've mentioned about Sergio a lot, but every year he's always up there in the going for green percentage, because he doesn't think about it, just goes for it every time, no hesitation. And that's great for GPP, but in cash, there's no way I would touch Sergio in cash. Just no way. Then you've got Hideki Matsuyama, and he's kind of a similar story to Sergio, is where he's just been playing poorly lately. But he's actually attracted a little more ownership than Sergio because his price has been very cheap on DraftKings. Coming in at 13% owned at the Wells Fargo Championship and 11% owned last week at the Players, despite his struggles at the Wells Fargo Championship, missing the cut there. But he had a really poor performance for the Players. The Wells Fargo Championship, that missed cut wasn't really as bad. I do believe that was an MDF from him. So he at least sort of made the cut there. And, you know, he's still sort of recovering from that injury. Perhaps that might be a reason they played so poorly. But it is Sawgrass. You know, a miscut at the Sawgrass, or at the TPC Sawgrass Players Championship. Very forgivable compared to other courses. So Matsuyama might be the GPP play here. Long-term, 85% made cut percentage. Really good tee to green, always kind of has been, and he's not even that horrible on the putting surface this year, just losing like 0.2 strokes per round, not that bad. And his average strength of field, best of anyone in this entire event here, average field strength 4.2% stronger than your average PGA Tour player at any given event. So Matsuyama, used to playing in, you know, a lot of his numbers come from really tough fields, and despite that, if you look at his long-term numbers, still has a really good top 20 percentage and of 42% and a top 5 percentage of 30%. So in 20 cuts over the last 2 years, 20 cut events with the strong average field strength, mind you, he's finished top 5 30% of the time. So almost one out of three times there. Matsuyama has the upside, and it took a little coming around with me, because I don't like guys who have played poorly in recent weeks. But with Matsuyama, I guess just him missing the cut by a stroke at Wells Fargo can be kind of forgivable. And then Sawgrass is always forgivable. And he's just in a spot where I don't think his ownership is going to be insane. He could be a nice little pivot off of some of these guys around here. Then you've got the reverse story with the next few guys. Guys that have been playing really poorly if you look over the last few years. But have turned it around recently have been quite hot. We're talking about Billy Horschel at $9,700 in DraftKings, 10-2 on FanDuel, very cheap on FanDuel. And then Jimmy Walker, $9,500 on DraftKings, 11-3 on FanDuel. That's very expensive there. Crazy to see these guys around 20-1 in the odds books, but Walker has two top five finishes in a row, runner-up last week at the Players, made a lot of money. And then Billy Ho, 5th at RBC Heritage, 11th at the Texas Open, 37th last week at the Players, and he was up there for a good amount of time before falling back over the weekend. These guys, long term, there's no way that they should be anywhere near the $9,000 range. Made cut percentage for Billy Horschel in 38 cut events over the last 2 years, 55.3% made cut percentage. Comparing that to Matsuyama for $200 more, he's at 85%. That is a 30% difference. So long term, it's not been the way to go. But if you're telling me greens of regulation are the name of the game here, that's something that he has done consistently throughout his entire career. And he's doing it again this year with a pretty good 68% greens of regulation percentage. But that's really all the merit that he has here. I mean, Average field strength, you can see for these guys, it's a humongous drop off against the likes of Matsuyama and Sergio Garcia, the guys that go to the majors and the WGC events all the time, and kind of stay away from the scrub events. You know, despite all that, if you look at their top five percentages, it's going to be horrible. I mean, Horschel, 12%. One of those was his win at this event last year, different course, of course. And then Jimmy Walker's 6%. Compared to Matsuyama's 30%, I mean, come on. If you're telling me that Horschel and Walker could get ownership anywhere near Matsuyama, I'm just really thinking that's not the right play there. Just look a little past the last month or so and just look at all of the miscuts that Billy Horschel had throughout the year in between his random wins. Going a little bit farther down here into this lower $9,000 range, you got Brendan Grace, who looks to set up for this course very nicely. That 84% made cut percentage in 19 tour events over the last 2 years. It's very good. Much better adjusted field ranking than the last two guys have talked about. His concern is a 49% driving accuracy for the year. That's not ideal, but he does very well at the medium par fours. You know, if you're just looking at overall metrics and cut making, he's very, very good and safe. Seems like a cash game play to me. I've come to like him a lot over just pouring over the stats for this week. It's just the only concerns I have are he's hitting it really poorly off of the tee. 294 in distance, not even at the 300-yard mark, and still coming in at under 50% driving accuracy. Just the total driving is pretty bad. And it's not really what I'm going for, but usually he's good with strokes gained approach. This year he's just dead even to the field, but he hasn't played a ton this year. He's played the Valspar, he's played the Masters, and he's played TPC Sawgrass last week. So not as much of a sample size as some of these other guys, but Grace had been killing it overseas, constantly making all of his cuts. You'll see on the DraftKings game log, he has all of his cuts made. And that might lead to some ownership as well. On FanDuel, they just made him way too expensive. But on DraftKings, he's one of the players you're going to be looking at, because you'll need to dip into the $9,000 range a lot this week, especially if you're not using Spieth. You've got some really solid plays in Adam Scott, $9,200, 11-8 on FanDuel, which is crazy. And Mark Leishman, $9,100, 11-2 on FanDuel. The FanDuel price is kind of right there. A little cheap on DraftKings. I think he's going to be very popular over there on DraftKings. Now for Scott, he's always been just a great classic ball striker. Kind of struggling this year when it comes to fantasy scoring, only 0.8 fantasy points per hole. You really want to pick guys from the 0.9 and above range, like, you know, everyone else I've talked about so far, really, outside of Horschel and Walker, are all at least at the, like, 0.93, 0.94 fantasy points per hole range. These guys, clearly, they're not in the same echelon. At least over the last 2 years, they have not been. Scott, he's always made a lot of cuts, but he's been missing them recently, including most recently at the Valero Texas Open, where he kind of got smoked, missed the cut by several strokes. Ended up 11th at the Players last week after a it looks like an MDF at the Wells Fargo, and we've seen his ownership drop, you know, week after week, 13%, 6%, 3%. This week his price has skyrocketed, and 22-1, the odds books just kind of have him priced up sort of out of nowhere here. Statistically, he's going to look good outside of the putting. He always does. It's just the fantasy scoring hasn't been there. He's been parring a lot, and maybe that's what you want here, you know. Honestly, it could end up getting a little tougher, especially if the winds pick up a lot and they knock everyone's balls off these greens. But Scott's still just looking like a strong overall play. Just kind of shaky with the form. He's kind of been up and down and everywhere, which isn't the Scott that we're used to seeing, but he'll make a nice little play, especially a play to get off of Leishman here. Looking at Leishman, just really solid overall for the last few years. Solid made cut percentage of 82%. He plays a lot. Adjusted field rank, one of the best guys in this field when it comes to that. Not doing a ton of work off of the tee, but strokes gained approach has really been his bread and butter lately, and good around the green game as well. Just a neutral putter. He makes a really solid play. Just looking back over the last 2 years, he has some really nice percentages here. 49% top 20 percentage, 32% top 10 percentage, 16% top 5 percentage, with a couple of wins over 28 cut events over the last 2 years. Just really nice looking numbers there. He's obviously been doing a lot better than Scott, who's taken a bit of a step backwards, as where Leishman's been kind of taking a step forwards. Although last week Scott definitely outplayed Leishman here. Leishman's had a couple of really lackluster performances, the RBC Heritage, and most recently at the Players Championship. But a lot of top tens, like I said, that top 10 percentage is really nice for a guy of his price. And, you know, to get a guy this good at in a field like this, at like what the, it looks like the ninth most expensive person on the board, I think on both sides. Yeah, he's going to make for one of the, I don't know about chalky, but he's definitely one of the best plays of the week. So circle Leishman. He hasn't come in with crazy ownership, 11% the last two times he's been out there. And with the poor performances recently, maybe that'll go down a little bit. But I don't know, he's in a really good value spot as well. Then Bo Hostler, $9,000. It's kind of a crazy price for him, but he's made six cuts in a row now, heading in here. And he had that runner-up in Texas over at the Houston Open, 15th at the Texas Open. Looked at that backwards. 51st, I was looking at Brant Snedeker there. He had 15th at the Texas. They flip-flopped, 51st in Texas, which has just been okay. 34th in Quail Hollow, 46th at Sawgrass. He was chalk right after he had that second-place finish in Houston. He came in at about 20% owned, and I think his price hadn't adjusted yet, but now at least on FanDuel, his price is way up there. And he was, 1% owned last week, 1.5% owned. Obviously, this week it's going to go up quite a bit with the scarcity of talent, but, you know, I would play him on FanDuel and avoid him on DraftKings because his FanDuel price is $9,500, very cheap. It's going to be one of the few values over there. On DraftKings, he's not going to have as much ownership, I guess. And I don't know, he might still, just because he's one of the few guys in this entire range, honestly, that doesn't have, like, recent miscuts. Just been playing steady for about 2 months now, almost three. He's fine. You know, he's perfectly fine. Just a better value over on FanDuel. Then Brant Snedeker, $8,900 on DraftKings, $10,900 on FanDuel. That is kind of crazy. He finished dead last week. He was horrible, like 10 over par. Had a couple of good finishes at the RBC Heritage and the Texas Open, but other than that, he's been pretty piss poor this year. A bad value when it comes to odds to pricing. And sure, he was low owned last week, but man, I even took a pretty decent amount of Snedeker because I thought he'd be low owned, and he was. He just did not pay off at all. He royally screwed me, especially on some lineups. So kind of mad there, but you know, just this week, you know, not to use him at all. And I'll watch him go out there and do some big things, of course, now that everyone is going to be off of him. But doesn't really make for a good play for a lot of reasons here. Just he hasn't been gaining any strokes anywhere. I just really can't understand his price here outside of, I guess, name value. And just like Bo Hostler, we've got another young stud up here that's just very high-priced on DraftKings. Aaron Wise for $8,800 on DraftKings, even cheaper on FanDuel, $8,700 on FanDuel. It's not often you see some cheaper on FanDuel than DraftKings, with them having $10,000 more of salary to work with. And he's coming off of that runner-up finish at Quail Hollow. I met him there, and he seemed very, very confident. He said that he was just feeling excellently about this week, which was kind of strange since he was coming off of like a dead last finish in Texas. But other than that Valero Texas Open, he's been really good, impressing. This is your NCAA champion from a couple of years ago. I think this is his first official year on tour. And he's breaking 40-1 odds at such a young age here, 38-1 right now, and his ownership is it was super low. If you had him at Quail Hollow, which I actually did just because I kind of grew a little biased towards the guys I actually got to talk to there, that really paid off because he was 0.3% owned and finished runner-up. That week where he screwed everybody who's 4% owned, started to get a little bit of hype, but that hype died completely once he got that finish. So I don't know what the ownership will be like. I assume people are going to start to get back into him with that runner-up finish. But on FanDuel, certainly he's going to be popular. But I don't know. I think I want to play him on DraftKings just because I think a lot of people will play him on FanDuel. And, you know, everyone's going to be going to the next guy on this list when I'm talking DraftKings. And, I mean, I will too. But to get a little share of wise here with his ownership potentially being shrunk by some of the guys near him, I don't think that's the worst call in the world. Despite his price, but might as well talk about this guy here, Charles Howell III, Chucky Three Sticks, $8,700 on DraftKings, $10,700 on FanDuel. It's a more appropriate price here. Has good course history here, but that doesn't matter. Just a good overall track record so far in the season. He's been rolling with his cuts made, making four top 21 finishes out of his last five starts, 17th last week at the Players. And he did that coming in under 2% in ownership. And this is a guy that's usually very chalky during the West Coast swing of the season, but he's just been rolling all year this year. Doesn't show much signs of stopping, and this is usually is in a place where he stops making cuts at. Long-term, 84.8% made cut percentage. Second best in the field, or no, third best in the field, just barely there. 0.2% behind Hideki. Great adjusted field rank percentage. Doesn't play in the strongest field, but the numbers are really good in that regard. 46% of the time he is finishing top 20. That's out of 33 cut events. Really, just really good solid numbers there. As far as gaining strokes, he gains strokes everywhere off the tee. Approach gains just barely. He's just barely over average around the green, but that's fine. Even gaining strokes putting, which is something that he usually does not do. So Howell's rolling. Only issue I have with him is he does not do well. Like his by far his worst hole type is the medium par four. So that's the only real room for concern. Other than that, I like him a lot. And I guess there is concern with him potentially being really high owned. He projects really well, the odds to pricing is really good, and his game log looks really sexy. So I think that, you know, despite the 2% ownership last week, it's going to be looking more like the RBC Heritage, where he came in at 11% ownership, and probably more than that, probably pushing almost 20%, just because of the field. Then you've got Rory Sabatini, $8,600, and then $8,900 on FanDuel. You know, if you're just looking at odds to pricing, he's a horrible play. But if you're looking at the game log, he's a fantastic play. He's been a top 30 machine lately. Really good at gaining strokes around the green and putting. Just short game has been where it's at. And if the short game matters a little bit more this week than normal, I kind of don't mind keeping it rolling with Rory. Although he's finally, you know, he'd been the guy we were grabbing from the 6K range on certain weeks. And now you're going to have to take him at the upper $8,000 range, which is nuts. On FanDuel, he's definitely a lot more viable, but his price is hard to justify. On DraftKings, they made such an adjustment on him. But, you know, looking at his statistics, long-term, it just... Long-term, he's actually played at really, really easy fields. So far, of all the guys we talked about, he's by far the lowest in average field strength, minus 2%. So he does tend to stick to playing the swing events. It doesn't really qualify for the majors and stuff. He's just been playing good recently. Overall, long-term, his long-term made cut percentage, 69%. Adjusted field ranking at 59%, which is pretty awful compared to the guys around him. You see Charles Howell, 72%. Leishman 74%, and you're kind of seeing how this field really drops off quickly when it comes to talent. There's just such a scarcity in this field. You're kind of seeing why Jordan Spieth is the favorite that he is. Just going on this list here, you got Peter Ulan, Scott Piercy, who's interesting because of his ridiculous greens regulation and stroke scanned approach numbers. If that's going to be the name of the game this week, you know, then I'm about it. He's even good at the medium and long par fours, which are just crucial this week. So if you don't mind a guy that's missed a few cuts in a row, Piercy, statistically at least, just lights out with the irons this year, specifically his long irons, which will come into play here for sure, as this is a longer course. And J.B. Holmes, who knows where we're ever going to get with him. He tends to play better in Texas, I guess, but who knows. Grayson Murray, guy that's going to be very popular, I think, this week. $8,200, and he's been rolling in good form. Missed that cut at the RBC Heritage, which was the less-than-driver course. But he's definitely a driver kind of guy. Gains all of his strokes off of the tee. Really bad at putting, actually. That's one of his Achilles heels here. But good finishes in the last few weeks. 30th at the Players. 16th at the Valero Texas Open. Had a couple 14th place finishes at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. The Shell Houston Open. Or I guess just the Houston Open now. So Murray is going to be someone that people are thinking about. He's a up-and-coming young star who I don't think he's realized his actual full potential yet. He could be he can end up being pretty good. He's still very young. And moving on here into this upper $7,000 range, I've got Martin Laird at $7,900, $10,000 on FanDuel. He is, like I mentioned earlier, he is right there behind Sergio Garcia. Just ever so slightly behind Garcia is the best in this field at those medium length par fours. Also good at the long par fours and all things par fives. So, you know, get rid of the short par fours, which this course does, which he struggles at, and you're looking at a pretty good play here. He's been in good form recently. Made the cut at the Players, 11th at the Valero Texas Open, 32nd at the RBC Heritage in Harbortown, and 26th at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Martin Laird, don't mind him much at all. I think he projects pretty highly. Then Ryan Palmer was the course horse here. Obviously not anymore, but 23rd at the Players. Just he sprays it off the tee a bit too much for me. Maybe the stats aren't showing it now, but I know long-term that's how he's always come off as a guy that just sprays it off of the tee, and he loses a lot of strokes gained up. Well, he has a bunch of strokes lost in his short game, and if that's gonna matter here, then that's not really something I want to see. I want the players that I pick this week to at least be formidable, or at least just losing a small amount of strokes in putting and around the green, more so putting. But you know, it's kind of unforgivable once you reach like the point where you're losing like half a stroke per round in your short game. So, you know, if we know for sure that it's all about the bombers here, then I'm cool with using Ryan Palmer. Just not huge on him this week in these circumstances. Keith Mitchell at $7,800, 9-2 on FanDuel. He's someone that's kind of popped recently. Didn't miss the cut by, or I think MDF last week at the Players Championship, but he was on quite the roll there. Runner-up at the crappy Corrales Punta Canas event, and 6th at the Shell Houston Open. Got quit saying that, giving Shell free advertisement they didn't pay for. Just the Houston Open. Just the regular old Houston Open. He's done at some relatively low ownership. Comes in with a really nice 0.95 fantasy points per hole. Does a lot of that on his longer par fives, so it's kind of nice to see. He strikes the ball 315 yards. Well, I guess I should say drives the ball, but he strikes the ball well too. 67% greens regulation percentage. But still losing strokes approach, so it's kind of interesting to see how that one works there. But really just gains all of his strokes off the tee. So, you know, the game log looks nice. His price seems fair. Just a bit worried about the stroke scanned approach numbers there, and he's also not a very good putter at all. But if you look closer at the stroke scanned approach section or have it breaking down further, he's losing all of his strokes with the irons, not the long irons. Gain strokes with the wedges, but really losing strokes with his mid-range irons. So that, I mean, that's reason there. I don't know. He's still a very young player. Very low owned last week as he was 0% owned as he got to sub in for Paul Casey. But yeah, I don't mind him as a GPP play. Don't know a whole lot about Joaquin Niemann yet, but so far the numbers are looking really good as far as off the tee and approach, just ball striking goes for the short game. A decent putter, but around the green, much to be desired. Now, this is coming off of only 5 events, and some of these being majors like the Masters, where we don't get any sort of shot link data for it, but 6th at the Valero Texas Open, and missed the cut by 2 strokes at Quail Hollow. That's really what we have to work with Niemann. Very new, fresh, young face to the scene here, and, you know, someone we'll definitely learn more about. If you want to play him, it looks like he could be an alright guy, but, you know, still just a very young and experimental sort of play there. Satoshi Kodaira won recently at the RBC Heritage and then turned around and missed the cut horribly last week at the Players. Statistically, it looks horrible, to be quite honest, like the worst scrambler on tour, but doesn't hit any. It's so weird. He loses well over an entire stroke around the green and loses a half a stroke approach per round, but he comes in almost number one in this entire field at only 1.1% bogey or worse percentage, and like 1.0 being Bill Haas, like that's the best. So he's like second or third in this entire field at avoiding double bogeys, and I'd wager it's just because he's only played 8 cut events on tour so far. So I'd definitely toss that one up to the numbers. So Kodaira is going to be more of an experimental play. Ben Crane, honestly, I don't know why I'm talking about Ben Crane. You know, his odds to win aren't going to be anything because he's not winning this thing, but he came 11th at the Texas Open, 43rd in Houston, 45th in the Corrales Punta Canas, the Dominican Republic. That's all we've really seen from him, but man, I know he's super short off the tee, but you know he's always great with his driving accuracy and a stud with a short game. I don't know, just a sprinkle him in there, maybe. I know he's not the sexiest pick you could make, but he could be a little sneaky. I mean, he's had no ownership to speak of, coming in at under 1%. So I don't know, just a little sneaky play there. There are tons of these little sneaky plays you can make, really, honestly. Once you get to this range, because it's just so hard to pick, you know, Rogers, Troy Merritt, who's been playing surprisingly well. 4 top 45 finishes in a row for Mr. Troy Merritt, who's grown out quite the beard. It's very beautiful. Shoot, that could be a play there. Johnson Wagner. I never thought I would recommend Johnson Wagner anytime this season. Last we saw him out at the Wells Fargo Championship, he had his 2nd top 20 finish in a row, 4th made cut in a row, and he came in at 0.2% ownership. I mean, there's a case to be made for Mr. Johnson Wagner here. I just can't believe it myself. And then another play that looks very good on paper, just has some horrible recent form to overcome, is Bill Haas, 80-1, surrounded by a bunch of guys 100-1 or worse, or significantly worse. 7th at the RBC Heritage, but other than that, it's been the other 4 events in his last 5 played have all been missed cuts. A few of them by just 1 stroke at Houston and in Texas, but did really poorly last week, just horribly. And missed the cut by a couple of strokes at the Wells Fargo. So his ownership's pretty much taken a big dive. He was pretty popular at Texas. It was 8% there, where he had really good form, or really good course history there. So, you know, even more of a disappointing performance for him. But if you look past the poor form, you know, he's someone that could, he leads the entire field in double bogey or worse percentage. And it would almost say that makes him a cash play, but his form just says no to that. Good at scoring on par fives. Awesome with the wedges. One of the best wedge players in this entire field. and gaining strokes approach around the green, just losing and putting, about losing a half a stroke per round putting. Long term, 68.8% made cut percentage, which is fair. I don't know. I think the odds, if you just go by odds to pricing, you're going to use a ton of Haas. I just don't really see the case for it personally. I would, you know, in this range, and it's pretty bad, I'm not going to lie to you, but I might almost prefer using Johnson Wagner, and I feel so awful saying it. I just think that his truly amazing putting skills, honestly, will come into play here with the, you know, the undulation and the slower greens. That's just my wager. Going down further, the pickings become just oh so slim. Maybe some Sam Saunders love. Maybe, I don't, it's just so hard to pick. Tyler Gooch has been playing okay this season, just really hit or miss with him. Von Taylor, you'd think of him as a guy who, you know, good ball striker, good, just really good driving accuracy, just not very long off the tee. 72.5% of his cuts made over the long term. So I don't know about a cash game play there with two really bad missed cuts in his last four events, but always coming in under 1%, so decent GPP play there. Who knows? Seamus Power. I know he had the awful, horrible last place finish at Texas, but other than that, he's been all right. You know he can crank it off the tee. His approach game is in the trash, though. Concern there. You know, when you're gaining all your strokes putting, that's not the greatest sign. Then, really, the class of this entire field when it comes to punt plays here, they have Kevin Na just supremely underpriced. He's 54-1 and surrounded by a bunch of guys 150-180-1. I don't know what Kevin Na is doing all the way down here. Always been a good par four scorer and does excellently on long par or par fives. Just always hits it in three, and it's just a super easy birdie for him. Phenomenal wedge player, so that 600-yard par four should be nothing for him. I know he's not the longest off of the tee, but he's just going to go 1, 2, 3, bam. On all the par fives, really. Just a really safe play, even though he had the miscut in Texas. Missed the cut by a stroke at the RBC Heritage, but other than that, he's been at least fairly consistent this year. Came in at under 1% owned last week. It's not going to be the case this week. He's going to be more chalky. And looking at plays to get off of him, perhaps Texas boy himself, Kevin Tway. He's looking all right. He's been making cuts recently. And he was 0.1% owned last week. Just to throw that out there, 0.1%. And you've got John Huh, who is good at the long par threes. And there are three really long par threes in this course, so that's nice to see right there. And good at the medium par four range and the long par fives. So that all matches up really well. And he's phenomenal at the wedges. Like, gains two strokes approach per round with his wedges. Just excellent numbers there. And we had another Corey Connors sighting at the Wells Fargo tournament. Just made another cut, and he had those two missed cuts at the RBC Heritage and the Houston Open, but other than that, he's made pretty much every cut in his young career. You see he's been to 17 cut events. He's made 76.5% of his cuts, the best of anyone in this low 7K range. So he's someone to consider. His odds aren't very good, but, you know, the pickings are just so slim here. It's ridiculous this week. Definitely not the week to go in or try to, you know, up your golf game. It really is just a not very good tournament. At the exactly 7K, you've got my guy Chang Soon Pan, who's actually been playing a little bit more recently. His the dollars haven't gone completely to waste on him, and exactly 0.1% ownership last 2 weeks. So if he ever has another one of those like T2 finishes, it's going to be super lucrative if he stays in that ownership percentage. And then Daniel Summerhays looks to be the best odds value to pricing play here. And, you know, he's always done pretty well in Texas. Just horrible, horrible greens regulation numbers for me personally, and loses all the strokes off, all the strokes approach. 1 1/3 strokes approach lost per round. That's too much trouble for me. I'll go with Pan. And then for your 6K guys, 6K and under, it's so bad. But Andrew Putnam isn't looking bad. I know he missed the cut at Quail Hollow, but a couple of top 10 finishes recently. Of course, the one was at the Corrales Punta Canas, but 8th at the Texas Open. That's really nice. Gets a lot of fantasy points per hole compared to some of these other scrubs. And his greens and regulation numbers are pretty good. And man, he's just like John Hutt, just kills it with the wedges. Gains zero strokes with his irons and almost zero strokes with long irons, but absolutely destroys it with the wedges. So, again, maybe these long par fives could be something that would be helpful for him, but it seems like he actually gets the most fantasy points on shorter par fives. Again, it's a guy that we don't have a ton of data on, 15 cut events played, but you know, you've got to consider him 120 to 1 odds compared to all these guys around him in the 200 to 1 area. So a lot of these guys just stick out sort of just by default based on how they're priced. Brian Gay, he's definitely a driving accuracy specialist. He's definitely one of the guys that were, probably upset by them watering down the fairways and stuff, trying to help the bombers out there. But he's been missing the cut by a stroke repeatedly. He had a strong start to the beginning of the season. Gets a lot of fantasy points for whatever reason. Gets a lot of them on par fours and par threes. I mean, if you're just looking at the fantasy scoring stats, he does a lot better of a job than all the other guys in this range. And then you've got JT Poston, who's made the most cuts of anyone in this range, but he also plays in really, really bad fields a lot of the time. And, you know, he's got turned it around recently, but last time we saw him at Quail Hollow, missed the cut by 3 or 4 strokes. It wasn't a very good sight there. I would almost mention Nate Lashley as someone I saw way up there at Quail Hollow, but that definitely turned out not to be the case, as he sunk himself quickly to 116th place finish. So looking like his top 25 finishes from earlier in the season were flukes. And if you consider the fields at, you know, the Houston Open with guys practicing for the majors and or the Masters, and the Corrales Punta Canas tournament being for what it is, I'd kind of not consider that. Hunter Mahan, $6,900. I know he has like 3 top 50 finishes in a row and some okay finishes at the or during the swing season, and also he is a member of this course, but still, just no, don't play Hunter Mahan. Made cut percentage, 46%. That's not good. It's not good at all. Loses almost exactly a 1-stroke approach per round, and almost does the same with around the green. Just makes all of his strokes up putting, and that's not what you want to go after. It's just so bad once you get down here. This is like the web.com territory in the 6'8", 6'7", 6'6" range. Hard to really justify a lot of plays, to be honest. So I would just avoid this entire range. There's really no one that you can play from this area. There was someone else that I wanted to mention as well. And we can find him all the way down at $6,600. And this is, you know, there are a couple guys in this range actually I'll mention. John Sendin, I know that he had the withdrawal in Quail Hollow and hasn't really done anything since coming back on tour. But it's sort of like Nick Watney, where he's just someone to watch out for. You know, 0.0% ownership at the Wells Fargo. You know, 0.3% in Texas, 0.1% the RBC Heritage, right? Now, if this was just John Sendin, like, as he was playing, like, 2 years ago, and you talk driving accuracy, I mean, he is, like, the best at driving accuracy of, like, anyone. But still just a lot of unknowns with him, and I guess he's at a withdrawal risk. And I also wanted to talk about Noah Goodwin making his PGA Tour debut. We don't know anything about him yet as far as the data goes, and he's 300 to 1 on the odds books, which isn't great. But he is a student at SMU, and in 2014, I do believe, this became the home course for the SMU Broncos. I want to say the Broncos. I feel like the Southern Methodist guys, they have like a horse as their logo. I'm pretty sure they're like the Broncos or something like that. But just something to note there. Take a shot or two at them. Min price on FanDuel, maybe do that as well. But don't go crazy with them just based on that narrative. Just take a little shot at them just in case. And then you've got Jeff Ogilvy at 6'5", 7'4" on FanDuel. He's done a lot of personal work with this course and all, but his last five finishes, 134th, 127th, 131st, 121st, 119th. Just no, don't use Ogilvy here. I don't care if he's played it a million times. Just no, don't do that. And yeah, this is just such a bad field. Not really much to talk about. I guess real quick, I'll say at the very bottom of the field at 6,500, Benjamin Silverman was a guy that got a little bit of love in the beginning of the season. Is a hype new guy, and you know, has been stuck in the 0.1% ownership range. But he hasn't even been like making cuts really. A 45th in Texas, I guess, but he's only been missing cuts by like a stroke. He's 250-1. I mean, there are definitely worse plays in the world, and if you really need to go all the way to the bottom, I would calmly recommend Silverman over Ogilvy, even though his odds are better. And Ogilvy's odds have to be based on his connection to the course. There's no other explanation. But really, just try to avoid anyone like really $7,000 and below. Just try as hard as you can to avoid that range this week. Kind of default to Kevin Na a lot, Kevin Tway, guys like that. Even like Bill Haas, Laird. You know, you're gonna have to spread it out a bit this week with the variance, you know. And I mean, shoot, you could try a very risky strategy of just loading up on one guy you think would be very low owned, and if that guy hits, you know, at the top five or something, that could be it for you. So who knows, but that'll do it for the Taco Tuesday PGA DFS podcast, and is presented to you as always DFSArmy.com. That's where you can find me in our premium chat. Come check us out, become a member using the link in the description, and use promo code TACO on sign up to let them know that we sent you. You know, help me out in the marketing crew here. I'm terrible at that. You gotta give me some love, fellas, and it supports the podcast, helps keep it free and to the public. So until next week, or maybe not next week, actually, because once again, just like Quail Hollow, I'm going to be on location. I will try to get a pod out. I'm not going to be, I guess I will be staying at a hotel there. The reason I couldn't do a pod during the week of the Wells Fargo Championship is because I was on crappy hotel Wi-Fi, couldn't do anything, but it's a lot closer to my house. Over there in Ohio, so I live in Indiana, pretty close. I'll definitely try to make a podcast on Monday night or maybe early Tuesday, probably Monday night, and have a nice little pod out for you guys, but you'll have to make sure to be checking the premium Slack chat constantly, as I will be giving you guys the live updates from the course throughout the practice rounds, and it proved to be essential during the Quail Hollow trip, just because it's so nice to be able to talk to not just players, putting coaches. Putting coaches will tell you a lot. So, yeah, that'll do it for the Taco Tuesday PGA DFS podcast. And I will hopefully see you guys next week.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA, weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get two free ebooks, as well as The Secrets to Unlocking a New Level to Your Game. Game.